Hello everybody, and welcome to the episode 18 of Competitive Magic with the Carnies. I'm your host from Italy, Andrea Mengucci, and join me as always, we have Javier Dominguez from Spain.
Hello everyone.
And Anthony Lee from Australia.
Hola.
Okay, we had another great weekend of magic, full of magic, and the Carnies delivered some very nice results. It was mostly, of course, our champion, Javier, who had a fantastic weekend with two great performances, a top 16 and a final of the Mox finals. The winner would be invited to the Mox, the eight people tournaments, very exclusive events. Unfortunately, Javier felt a little bit short, but still a great performance. Congratulations, Javier.
Yeah, thank you. The tournament's exclusives that I have never got to play into it. I keep trying, but I keep losing the finals. So, yeah, I mean, it was a little bit rough to lose the finals, but it was a good weekend. I also, as you know, I didn't play that much limited in the last 2 years, but this last weeks I've tried to improve my limited game again, just, you know, looking forward for the Philly draft. And it felt good, you know, to just sign up into limited tournaments and do fine. Even losing the winning in was with a not a great pool. It was like a weakish pool where I got just lucky in the games and whatever and went 7-2. And then on Sunday, I just got a great pool. I went 1-1 and I still kept playing because I thought that there was a chance I could just make the 8-1 and it was good. But I didn't, you know, like I didn't close the the job, but yeah, I guess, I mean, it hurt to lose the finals, but afterwards it's like, well, it was a fine tournament. But that's not the only thing I played. I also played the Arena Open. Did you guys play it on the Arena?
I didn't.
I still haven't updated Arena in a while. But what format was it?
So it was Arena Cube, which honestly has impressed me a lot. Like, if you've like the other cubes, I recommend that one as well. It's one of the funniest cubes I've ever played. Like, I'm super impressed by it. Like, games are just very good. They're like, there's a lot of good cards, but they're kind of like balanced between each other. And most importantly, the archetypes feel like any archetype can be good enough, which is something I don't like of the high power cubes, where if you go like full Tinker against like full, I don't know, Mono White or whatever, like it's not a close game and the weaker decks rely on the other ones getting cut. But here, like, all the decks can be very good. And the kind of games are like a mix of cube and a standard. It reminds me a little bit of the modern cube. But here, it's more like a normal draft, where cure from and the such is a little bit better than the bombs. So, because there are less bombs than in something like a modern cube. So, yeah, I mean, I had a blast playing it. I didn't make anything. Like, I went 0-2, 0-3, whatever, on day two. So, I lost a lot. But I still love the experience. And I think, for me, so far, among all the Arena Opens I have played, that was the best one by far. I used to play the constructed ones and not the limited ones because I was not a big fan of sealed or whatever. But this one was like a no-brainer for me. Like I knew I would play it, and trying the format, I just loved it. So I recommend you too, and also all the listeners, if you're like, you know, randomly there and you like to play some cube, Arena Cube is a very fun option for me.
I have a question about it. Sounds about the Arena Cube. Do they have a alchemy cards in it?
Yeah, they do, and some of them are like great. Like this Oracle of the Alpha, for example, I think the card's super fun. Like the one that conjures the power 9 into your deck. I don't know if you know that one.
Let's say I haven't played Arena in many months. Would I have to read a lot of cards if I had to play that cube?
No. It's like some cards. I don't know how many cards are there from like the alchemy set or whatever, but it's like a little, like, I don't know, maybe one per pack or something. Like it's not like the cube is only alchemy cards with some normal cards. It's just like the best cards or whatever that are there in Arena. Not all the best ones, but like a selection of them. Like, for example, cards like Nissa Who Shakes the World or the 6-mana Liliana that put zombies, those are not there. So it's not like all the best cards. It seems like the card pool has been carefully curated. So there's like enough good cards to give this cube feeling, but not enough. Of course, there's nothing like Oko and such, you know. Like the only cards that are like good for the archetypes, like we have Teferi on blue white, but that's like a blue white control card, right? No, I don't think you have to read many cards, Mango. Like some of them, I had to read some because I also didn't know all the alchemy cards. But then again, it's like a very few. It's like alchemy is like one more set, you know. Like there's, I don't know, 20 sets in Arena or whatever, but this is one more. So it's not like I mean, I can remember like now 3 or 4 cards from the alchemy sets. I don't know if there's more. Yeah. Maybe it's 5, 10. I don't know. It's not too many.
Thankfully for me, though, today, actually, the 21st of December, the vintage queue comes on Magic Online. So I think I'll stay on my favorite platform. But it's nice that Magic Arena also has a queue, because I believe Cube is one of the funniest form of playing Magic. And even the Arena Open was Cube, so people could win up to $2,500 playing Cube. That's very cool. I think that is very cool of the Magic Arena system.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of intrigued by this. I have generally ignored Cube because it just doesn't interest me whatsoever. But I don't know, maybe Javier's kind of sold me on giving it a go. Yeah, I'll try it.
You could try.
I prefer it to Vintage Cube.
Yeah. I also have always thought that Cube is very good at sharpening skills, because it's like a mix of deck building and limited play, where you have to, you know, make use of how well you understand constructed cards, because you might know a card was good in Standard, so you may think it will be good in Cube, but that's not how it usually works. Particularly there's like a group of cards that were not like great in Standard or even playable, but they're actually good at Cube because the time wasn't right, like the metagame wasn't right, like cards like, I mean, Remath before Adeline was printed, or like even cards like Rankle, which are like,
oh, you know, wow,
like their Rankle was pretty good in this Cube, for example. Like there are cards like that, and if the better you understand these cards, the better you are, like, you're suited to put them like in decks, in different decks, or just build a deck around that cards that, you know, because there are different synergies, and that's the good mix. I think you will get some benefit of playing Cube in addition for the fun. It's also very fun.
Yeah, and you know, we need to start shaking off the limited rust anyway, so you know, sounds like a good way to ease in, right?
yeah,
speaking about this, Your mocks was both days Brothers War limited, so sealed plus draft.
Yeah, it was. The series was sealed, and then topic was draft. Yeah.
And the Pro Tour Philadelphia will have instead the new set. So the Pyrexia old one, it's the draft format of that one.
Yes, only one.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, it's all limited. Like, I think there's this big distinction between limited and constructed, and I think, even if you have to prepare for a different limited format, playing any kind of limited that's sort of like same power level or whatever is going to help you. Like, it's going to sharpen your like limited attack, block, skills or whatever. Yeah. Like, I haven't played a lot of sealed because the tournaments were sealed, but like, you know, I don't think it matters much if you play like one format or the other in terms of like, you know, becoming a limited player again, because a few years ago I was like, at least to myself, like just both constructed and limited player, but nowadays I've been like only a constructed player, so I'm trying to change that, and the way I'm doing it is just playing a bunch of sealed, which took me a few tries to actually like it again. The first one I was like, ah, sealed sucks, you know, you just play there and wait until they play mythic and you die again and again. But I knew after a few repetitions I will start liking it again, and here I am, you know, like that's the way I play the mocks also, because I do like sealed again, because 1 year ago, I maybe will not play these mocks because they're like huge events or whatever and they're sealed, but now I'm just loving everything again.
Awesome.
Let's say maybe, yeah, last year we had like more events going on, whereas now it's a little bit more chill. So qualifying to the mocks is a very big deal right now. Whereas maybe last year we were more focused on like MPL and staying on the MPL and things like that.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's life, right? Things change and you change with them.
Absolutely. Unless you're a legacy
player. For sure. What about you, Anthony? How did your weekend go? You played some RCQ, right?
Yeah, I played an RCQ. I was trying to help some friends qualify, and one did. So Kate Davison won the RCQ here in Western Australia, which was great, because I think this is something that a lot of competitive players can sympathize with as well. She made, I think this was her fourth, maybe it was the fifth finals this season. And you know how it is. You just lose the finals and then you're like, all right, so she lost the finals. Then the next week, she made the finals, multi-5, lost again, and then again. And at that point, you know, you really think, oh my God, like it's kind of soul crushing. Even though, you know, objectively your win rate has to be really good to make like finals 3 times or 4 times in one season or consecutively. So objectively it's good, but it feels terrible. But you know, eventually she got there, and that's kind of, I think, an experience that I think a lot of the grinders out there can sympathize with, right? So that was awesome to see someone get there after trying many times.
What deck did she win with?
Blue Red Jin, like the one that Julian Wellman played at Worlds. I just updated his list a little. It's a great deck. I think if people like that kind of... I mean, I think those Blue Red Spells decks always have a lot of fans in every iteration of standard and often non-standard formats. For your sake, Mangu, I will say that it is also a very monetarily inexpensive deck compared to a lot of other decks. So for that reason, it is also a good choice. But I think it's a lot of fun. It's a fun deck. It's a good deck. It plays differently to everything else in standard. It's high recommendation, I suppose.
MTE Finance.
All right. Make sure to, after the episode, send me the deck list. So we'll put it in the show notes.
Oh, of course.
So
yeah.
Our listeners can also pilot that deck and play on Arena in paper, because the standard season is coming up. The next RCQ in March is going to be standard, so I have to read some of the standard cards.
What better way to do that than Arena Cube? But yeah, you got to catch up on standard, Mango. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it, because the thing is, you'll never force me to look at pauper cards or whatever, but now we're forcing you to look at standard. I feel like I'm winning.
Wizards is helping you and forcing me.
Yeah,
to do
yeah. I've got, I mean, I, yeah, it helps to have wizards on your side, you know, but it doesn't change the fact I'm winning, it does it?
For sure. All right, let's talk about a format that Wizards doesn't force anybody to play. That is Modern.
Thank God. Yeah.
Modern is a few things happened this weekend, which is pretty cool. I think we're definitely have to shout out the two winners of the challenge, which both played pretty strange decks. So the first winner, it's called Burnt Taco 77, and he won with a deck that we've never seen before. It's a teamer with Brandon Six and Saga. So like all these mid-range Saga deck we have seen Jund. You can say that Jeskai Breach is kind of a mid-range with Saga, of course, as a combo deck, but can also grind. And this one has instead of playing black for Discard Spell, it's playing blue for powerful cards like Ledger Shredder, Expressive Iteration, and then some cards like Mana Leak, Spell Pierce, Spell Snare. Very interesting deck.
Whoa, yeah.
And I don't know if you saw it. It's something that really caught my attention, because like it's so weird to see, you know, just a completely new deck that you've never seen before, just winning an event. For sure, like the cards are always similar, but still, you know?
I think this player they put up consistent results, so I certainly recognize the name. I'm not sure if it's a person that I would recognize, but I recognize the username at least. I don't know. I think this list must have had quite a bit of thought put into it, because I think 3 Urza Saga is probably correct more often than people are willing to do, but they have that here, and numbers like 2 Tarmogoyf really stand out, right? Like, you don't really get to 2 Tarmogoyf at random. So, I imagine this deck is tuned. You know, without knowing, for sure.
In the top 8, in the 5th place, there's another mid-range Saga deck with Brandon 6, but it's Jund instead. And it's playing main deck A White Might, whereas Burnt Taco is in the sideboard. This is probably the single card that you see the most in these decks, because it kind of fits. For example, today I was playing Tron on my stream, and I also had 3 A White Might, and that deck doesn't even play Urza Saga. So this little uncommon, definitely seeing a lot of playing Modern, that you can either with Congregate Creator or with Urza Saga. Very cool addition to Modern, for sure.
Yeah, it's a mighty little card, yeah, for sure.
I just love how you almost said bad cards like Mana Lake. It was so close. Huh. So like good cards, and then just like cards.
Good cards and also Mana Lake.
Yeah, but he was pretty close to say like, you know, also bad cards like Mana Lake. Yeah, I mean, this
and you went out and said it.
It seems interesting. I think it makes sense, though, because now we have a modern metagame where the combo decks are, like, again, like, very important, particularly creativity. But against a creativity deck, I think you prefer counter spells than discard spells. So even though if they're, like, weaker in a vacuum, I think it does make sense. I think that's why, like, this deck looks to me like it was made from the Jund. Like, Jund became Teemer. I don't think this is, like, a Teemer deck made from scratch in that sense. But it could be, of course, but I think it tries to do the same, but instead of like, you know, Thoughtseize and Hope it on top deck, you just kind of spell it. Because also there's like this persist version of creativity now, that's the most common one. And of course, if you play Teferi and the such, well, counter spells are not great, but if you're playing black and they're playing persists and such, I think counterspells are better. That would be my inclination. Like, I would think that's the direction. Like, well, that's the situation, yeah.
So, to me, on the other hand, I think black gives you very good cards because I think that the Inquisition of Kozilek, Thoughtseize are like good cards. The problem is that not having expressive iteration in your deck, I think it just puts you a tier below if you want to do the mid-range stuff. That's why I would always love to play blue-red deck instead of a Rakdos deck, like blue-red Murktide over Rakdos scam in the tournament. And this could be similar things, like why would I prefer to play a Timur Saga deck over a Jund Saga deck?
It has to be better than the mirror also, yeah, for that reason. Yeah. Like, iteration is a great card. Iteration plus Bubble is one of the reasons why blue-red Murktide is so good. And honestly, I think this deck just tries to play like a blue-red Murktide, but instead of the filler cards, like a lot of extra counterspells or whatever, they just wants to play Ursa's Saga and Brennan's Six. So this deck could be good. I don't know. It also seems like kind of fun, at least to my standards. Plus, it has the Broken Fable once again.
I was going to say, that's a sign they were very conscious of the mirror, right? Like, yeah. If you put three Fable of the Mirror Breaker in your deck, you're really thinking about the fair matchups.
Exactly. I don't know. This deck could be very good. I look at the list. I think, like, even Mana Lake, even though, you know, it could be bad by Mango standards, I think the card is likely quite good here, and certainly better than Counterspell because of the mana base. I like this.
It's close enough to Counterspell. Yeah.
I like this deck.
I was going to say that both the two mid range Saga deck were playing three and four Fable. So Fable is already like, it's very much a stock card, especially with Giganta, you know, as a companion. I think Fable fits perfectly.
Yeah, Fable invading this format as well. I mean, I think, I assume you will maybe try this week, this deck. I will be curious to hear what you have to say. I guess next week we will know. Your listeners will know what Mango thinks of this deck. It looks good to me.
If like, this kind of deck is good, I would love that.
Yeah, it will be. I wouldn't mind if I had like a for fun tournament or whatever to play. I will certainly try to build this deck and play and see how it feels, because it's also like good cards and interaction, so can go wrong.
Yeah.
So my experience of trying all these like Urza Saga Brennan 6 midrange deck has been that they're not very good. Like, either, you know, I've tried Jund, I've tried the Gruul deck and things like that.
What's the problem with them?
The value is so slow. The Urza Saga Construct are so tiny that sometimes you just don't want to do that, or they just don't really stand up by themselves as threats. So your land just dies and it doesn't really replace itself. Like, sometimes you can get Drum, but yet then you need to tap a creature. So like, the Urza Saga is just not that good. I think that in Jeskai Breach, Urza Saga is good because it picks up the Mox Ember, which is both like a combo piece and it's actual Mox. Whereas here, I think it's just weaker, because like, even Shadow Spear, there's some matchups where it's not good. Drum and Bomb, like, I just don't really, because, okay, if you play against control deck, sure, it's great. You go Saga, you pass, you make Constructs, but that's not really the world we live in. Control is barely playable, and also Dress Down is everywhere.
Okay.
Blood Moon, it's everywhere. So I feel like, yeah, this deck can probably just be better without Saga, in my opinion.
Could be, yeah. I mean, possible, it has a lot of engines going on, like Shredder plus Renan 6, that has to be good also, to some extent. Like, maybe this deck could be even better with Saga. I do agree, Mango.
Yeah, that actually makes sense, because the sagas here are like very value oriented. It's like playing six Fables or something, you know, basically. Like,
and you also have Renan 6 and iteration. Like, you have like a lot of kind of advantage in a way.
Maybe,
yeah,
I mean, too much
deck,
of that.
Yeah, okay. You could just cut the sagas and just play like more good cards, I guess. Like two more lands and one.
Just be Teemo? Just straight up Teemo midrange?
Yeah, and I just got the bomb, the drum, and the spear. I could see that. Just got three artifacts, got the three sagas, put three lands, and then threw good cards. And then maybe, you know, like, we could make... Yeah, I mean, this is basically blue-red, the splash, Tarmogoyf on Renan 6, right?
So yeah.
Also, you mentioned Renan 6 and Iteration. Those are cards that cost red-green, blue-red, saga at colorless.
Yeah.
So really, outside of the Fable, you don't have that many uses for color. I don't know. I mean, again, I've tried... I played a lot of Modern this year, and at the beginning we were playing a lot of decks where Urza Saga was a midrange card. But now we know that Saga, it's only good in decks that use it to fetch up a combo piece, so either Hammer or you know, Mox Ember or Amulet Titan, or it's good in Affinity because the constructs are incredibly large, and one Urza Saga wins alone against every midrange.
Yeah,
Urza
Saga is a better linear card.
It doesn't.
Yeah. Better linear kind of mod. Maybe this is the evolution of the blue-red mid-range decks post Leyline Binding, because, you know, we recognize that Murktide suffered from the printing of Leyline Binding, and maybe this is the adaptation. You play cards that are better against Binding than Murktide, so Tarmogoyf, Renin 6, Fable, those are all, you know, they're much less devastating to have bound up than Murktide, so maybe this is, yeah, maybe just straight-up Teemer is where that deck had to adapt in order to, you know, readapt to Leyline Binding.
There are also more subtle details I'm seeing now, like, because this player, for example, it plays two Voseju, even though he plays two 40 iterations. That means this player values Voseju a lot. Like, we could say the splash is for Renin 6, Tarmogoyf, and Voseju. Because it's often going to be an off-color land, yet still we can see two of them in this deck, right? I assume he wants to... He thinks Renin 6 plus Voseju is, like, an important plan against many decks like a Tron or whatever. And also, that's very good against Leyline Binding. Like, if you're binding something like, you know, a Fable and they have two Voseju in their deck, well, that's trouble, you know, because they will get the value again. And that's also a good part. Yeah, I guess Saga also not very good here, but it gets other Spellbomb, which is the answer against Murktide. Because this deck is kind of weak to Murktide, and the fact that you can answer Murktide with a land, also a big deal, I assume. Shadow Spear also kind of answers Murktide if you have, like, a Goyf or something as well. So... Not answers, but, like, you know, cancels the effect.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe also why Saga could be better here than, like Jund, where you have Terminate for Murktide. Here, you have no way to deal with Murktide, and Saga, it seems to me like it's the best way, right?
Yeah, you can see in the sideboard two Rana Fool. The main deck is kind of cold to Murktide, of course. You can pile up two Burn Spell, another Heat plus Bolt, for example. I would say that this player respects a lot Amortime. I have kind of changed my opinion on what's the best deck right now, and I believe right now it's Murktide is second place and Amortime is first place.
Wow.
And I think you need to respect it more. I think Voseju Who Endures is obviously a great card in combination with Ren. There's some decks that now drop blue, so no more Spell Pierce, but a lot of Blacksmith skill. Blacksmith skill protects you from Voseju, whereas Spell Pierce doesn't. So there's a lot of levels here to make in the format of Modern, of course. And I think that playing Voseju plus Ren, it's definitely a nice place to be right now in Modern.
Yeah. Also, Unseen Grudge, like it's 2012 or something like that on the sideboard. Pretty good against Hammer, by the way. Like, very good.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Also, Voseju, another fun fact is that protects you from creativity targeting the treasure. Because sometimes creativity, in order to play around Bolt and Heat, you target the treasure, but Voseju, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the more I look at this deck, the more sense it makes. This might be good, Mengu, I think.
Yeah. I have a plan to play it this week. I was actually thinking about playing Team Murktide, which is blue-red Murktide, splashing green for Renin 6. I don't think you need Tarmogoyf, but yeah, the Renin 6 Voseju, I really like that plan.
Right.
But speaking of decks with mana leak, do you know that mana leak won both challenges on Saturday? We talked about that extensively, but also on Sunday. Why Uriel is a player that I have read is their name a lot.
Another familiar name,
always playing creativity and two copies of mana leak and one copy of burst lightning.
Burst lightning.
Well. I don't know.
Okay, you have to explain that one.
You can?
Okay, so Burst Lightning, that is the shock.
Why? But like, why? What?
Yeah, that's to the listeners that maybe have never seen a Pascal Maynard draft. Burst Lightning, it's a 1-mana instant speed, deals 2 damage, but with Kicker, you pay 5, you deal 4 damage.
Wow, 4 damage.
And I don't know, it goes face, I guess.
Upstairs, huh?
Why? Yeah. I don't understand. Why would you play this
I
over
honestly
Unholy Heat?
Don't know why you're not playing Unholy Heat here. I guess you want to pay 5 mana to deal 4 damage.
And it kills Yawgmoth. That's the only one that comes to my mind. I mean, that one is relevant for sure. But also Unholy Heat can kill Yawgmoth if you have Delirium, which, you know, with 4 Prismatic Command, you know, play Fable and
does
workers,
does creativity ever get into like racing situations? Like, is there a chance that like there's some math where like an Archon attack plus a burst lightning kills them before they can get you or something weird like that? Maybe
it's strange, right? Because you can go 3 and then 9. That's a 12.
It didn't seem intuitively so, but
then
like
9, 21, so it doesn't even give you a turn.
I think Yeah, outside of this burst landing, which is obviously cool and interesting, I think the most important thing that I came up to realize last week is that the persist in creativity is just a trap. Every time
yes,
I was playing, I played a couple of leagues with various creativity lists, with persist, beta reunion, and things like that. And I kept on, like, let's say I mulligan to six, and I had to bottom another card and not the Archon, because I had to play Bitter Revelation, Bitter Reunion, or Prismatic Command, and discard the Archon. But then my Bitter Reunion, you know, would get counter or things like that, and I just draw maybe another Archon, so my hand would be like two Archons. And I think that's just not a tier one deck, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think...
Yeah,
I thought that when I played Creativity with Teferi, I thought that Teferi was bad, but the Persist is so much worse. Like, wow. Only works in like the worst case scenario and does nothing outside of that, but it doesn't even save you by itself in that worst case scenario, which isn't even that bad anyway in general. Like, I think the payoff is not there in terms of what
it costs. This winning list doesn't play black, just straight up zero black cards outside of Archon of Cruelty. Doesn't play white, so no Leyline Binding, no Teferi. It's basically
just a
deck with four Brennan Six, which fits very well in the deck because your goal is to get land drops after land drops, to get your Dwarven Mine, as well as get to 8 mana to cast the Archon. So I think that this list, despite you might disagree on the Burst Lightning, the Mana Leak, the Spell Pierce, I also disagree on only playing 3 Archon of Cruelty. I think you should really play 4 because, well, you just draw 2 and... you know, then your deck is much weaker, I think. So, but outside of that, it might not be a bad idea to just completely get rid of all the and just focus only on your combo, which is, you know, Creativity and Transmogrify.
Yeah, I like what's going on here. Like, the deck is just very straightforward. Like, no Teferi, no Persists, no things that are, like, outside of the plan. It's just all enablers, answers, and the combo. Like, this is going to often play, like, a blue-red control-ish deck and then just combo you, which is... what the first versions were doing, right? And then things got, like, you know, more sophisticated or whatever. Yeah. And this is like a simpler deck again. It's similar to the first ones. And I think this is...
maybe that's better all along, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, maybe not for... like, I don't think that's the case for all the matchups. Like, of course, if you play against control, Teferi is better. If you play against Discard Spells, I think Persist is better. But, like, you know, you play against Hammer, well, you just want to have answers and the combo, right? Like... and that goes on. If you play against, I don't know, Jammoth, you also probably want to be like that. I think it makes sense. And Mengo said, like, this play is like a specialist of this archetype. So, I mean, I don't like the burst landing, but I actually like the rest. Like, I like the leak even. I think leak is a good card. And if you're going to go like counterspell or removal, into counterspell removal and then fable, mana leak is as good as it gets. Because
makes
people also do Sages.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, they play with Sages, so it's not like, and also like Dwarven Mines or whatever. It's not like double blue will be like reasonable for a counterspell, but Mana Leak is if you're playing a combo deck, it's almost as good as counterspell in terms of like the effect.
Yeah, you're not playing a long game here, yeah.
Exactly. And 3 mana is a lot anyway. We had Mana Leak for years and it was like, you know, not easy to play around Mana Leak unless you were playing control versus control. So absolutely. I think I like this. I mean, this if I'm playing creativity, I wouldn't mind just attacking this one. Then again, I mean, the burst running, I'm not a fan, but it could be anything else. It could even
be like there has to be. There must be some. I mean,
there must be some reason
we
don't think. I mean, I think killing Jammoth is something that can actually matter quite a bit because Jammoth makes it so like it's not super easy to combo because they play Jammoth, mm-hmm. and then you just need a treasure, right? Otherwise, you're just like not getting there.
Don't do anything. Yeah.
Yeah, but then again, I assume Holy Heat also does.
Unholy Heat.
Yeah.
Unholy Heat is just better. Like even a Primeval Titan. But anyway, again, this player, I've read his name a lot because I'm always interested in creativity because I think it's like a very good deck, and people just haven't figured out a good list yet. So I always, I read this name a lot in the top eights. Once again, for both the winners of the challenges played 2 Bozeju and 4 Brennan Six with a 3rd Bozeju in the sideboard. So the respect for Hammer Time is huge. And that's also, you know, one of the things like in order to win in Modern, like today, for example, I played 2 decks that I'm not going to mention, but whatever. And I got so clowned, I think it's the right word, by Hammer. Like, I played against Hammer, the decks, you know, were not the best decks or whatever, and Hammer just beats you so easily. Like, if you don't respect that deck, you're gonna lose so easily to Hammer. And you know,
one question, Mengu, do you think this Iona is getting in against Hammer?
So I have in my sideboard I have Iona and Emrakul just because I like against decks that I think have Orvar, which of course Amur is. I like to do the switch. Don't necessarily cut all the Archon of Cruelty, but I cut some of them. I also consider Sundering Titan in the sideboard. Iona is great against Kam because you name black, they die. Against Hammer, I would bring it in. Yes, it never came up, but it did came up in some other matchups, like against Solitude, for example. Iona is great.
Okay.
Solitude to fairy decks and things like that.
That's
So
cool. Okay,
I think it's a good thing. Mostly it's for Orvar because you want to make
okay.
Orvar. Like they just have Orvar in hand and you reveal Iona or Emrakul and they just die.
Cool. All right.
But
I
yeah,
think.
there's one last deck I want to talk in Modern,
Okay.
if you let me. It's Blue Rep Prowess. Blue Rep Prowess, it's a deck that I have played with very good success last month, but never didn't really think it was, you know, that big of a player in Modern. Didn't put it in my top 15 for November. But it's been so consistent, and it's been played by the Mox champion, Sherry X-Man, so, you know, one of the best Magic Online players. And he played it and made it to a top 8 of the challenge. So obviously he thinks that the deck is, you know, good enough to play it, and the deck is good enough to make a top 8. So I think Blue Red Prowess is right now not anymore just a budget deck. It's actually a good deck in Modern. Have you ever played against this deck? What's your opinion on the deck?
Not yet, but we liked when I remember when it showed up. We already had this podcast and we talked about like how this deck was promising, and I mean it just got a little bit different improvement with the Iconoclast, I assume. But it just I don't know. It just seems like a solid deck. I haven't played against it or with it, so I'm like completely blind. But I see the deck list and I think, well, this deck must be stable and also must be like good. I mean, at least proactive.
Yeah, this is another of these decks that just loses pretty badly to Amertime, as you know, you don't have access to that much cyber cards. Well, you see like two Powered Spellbomb to deal with Sanctifier and Vec, two Shattering Spree to deal with the Hammer, but it's not really enough. The deck, I've lost to it with my once again bad decks because it's so fast that really puts you in the corner. So I think that it's definitely a deck that players might get close to Modern with. Like if you don't play Modern, this is a nice because it's cheap. It's only you know, it's not that as expensive as the other decks, and it's also not that hard to play. You have a just a pretty proactive plan and some nice card advantage. Yeah, it's very, very similar to Kuldotha Burn in Pauper, by the way, if you're a Pauper listener. Anything else to add in Modern, guys? Any plans of what decks you want to play in the next if you play Modern this weekend, if you have an RCQ, Anthony?
No, modern is finished for me.
Modern
It
is
will probably
finished. Did
be.
it ever begin?
Oh, you know, we have been in modern. We have had the trial sometimes, but I think it will be some time yet until I have to return to modern jail. So, it's all good now.
No.
Yeah.
Well, this weekend I'm not going to my local Saturday tournament, but if I will, I will definitely play Burn Tackle 7775 deck list. That's what I will play.
Nice.
Absolutely.
That's cool. That's
Wait,
cool. I will.
I mean, isn't it this weekend is literally Christmas, right? Like, I mean.
Well, I'm not playing, but I mean, here in 24, I'm pretty sure they will have events and people will come. You know, 24 in the morning, why not? That's
Oh,
we
okay.
we're more like celebrate on 24 night and then 25 in the day. Like
What's
24, it's like a working
the
day.
Spanish morning?
Tournament is like a 10, I think, or 11.
Oh, okay. I was thinking,
So
yeah,
actual
exactly.
morning, I guess. So we
Yeah,
dance. It's so
late
four rounds.
morning.
It's morning because it's four rounds. So we go lunch after the
Okay.
tournament. So we end at like 2:30, which is Spanish lunchtime. So it's all you know,
Outrageous.
it's all
Perfect.
squared. Yeah, all perfect.
Perfect, perfect. All right. Let's segue into Pioneer. Pioneer had, I believe this is the last regional championship. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No. There's another regional championship this weekend.
Okay,
I
cool.
really mean
So we're
it this
gonna
weekend,
cover it
yes.
next episode. But yeah, the Central
Yeah.
America, Mexico, Caribbean regional championship happened. The winner is is Twitter is _Bood. I don't know its name, but he played Kiruga Fires. That's probably one of the best decks against Rakdos. So he was very ready for the Rakdos metagame that, you know, of course, the most popular decks in almost every regional championship at this point. So it makes no surprise that it was probably the most popular deck even at this event. And yes, actually, I'm looking at the... yes, there were 32 Rakdos players and 16 Mono Green players. So, you know, of course, 28% of the field, and Kiruga Fires got the job done. Yeah,
wow.
I think this was just a metagame call and a rightful one.
Just to know, like, this topic, though, only had like one Rakdos midrange deck.
Yes.
So the Rakdos deck just didn't do well, like, overall compared to how many players that were playing it. I guess I think this is gonna be a trend. When there's like this type of decks are the most played decks by a lot, they tend to underperform again and again. And I think that's
don't have like a ton of inherent power, so people can get angles on them, like Kiruga, and it's exploitable. So just what happened?
Kiruga didn't win any of the other RCs, right? The first one,
I think. I don't think so.
Okay. The first one, yeah.
Go companion mechanic.
Wow.
Yeah, there was also an enigmatic incarnation deck in the top 8. By the way, 8 different decks in the top 8. That's cool.
That's really cool. Yeah.
Really? See that?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. there's two mono white.
The finals. Two mono white. The finals was two fires deck, Enigmatic versus Kiruga.
I'm nice. I'm pretty sure that makes Anthony happy, because Anthony, I don't know if the listeners know that. Maybe they do, but Anthony's his favorite card is Fires of Invention. You know, his
I think Fires of Invention is unforgivable. I think it's a worse design than Orko Thief of Crowns. I think I just don't understand why someone would have thought that it was okay to try to print a card like Fires of Invention and think it would be enjoyable. Whereas, like, I can actually understand what gets you to get to Orko. I think the numbers are just wrong. I don't know. Fires of Invention, just absolutely miserable card. Hate it. I guess you might have guessed that from the way that Javier said it was my favorite card, in a way that really implied that it wasn't. But just what a horrible
that
card.
Okay, right, that, Anthony, now you know. Yeah, that's how much he likes it. Yeah.
Anthony, I want to talk about to you about this. So we were the one of these arena pro tour. I remember we were in the lounge. It was me and Javier sit down, and a WotC employee comes at us and asks us, what do we think about that standard? Oh, sorry. The standard was the one that actually Javier ended up winning with Gruul, where I was playing Oko. Field of the Dead was also legal in that PT. And Javier was like,
we decided
so critical.
On Zertar Goblin,
Javier was so critical at Oko. He said something like, you can't have this card. This card has to be banned. And I was like, nah, no way to ban it. They just release it. It's a mythic rare. It's a planeswalker, you know.
But you have to understand, Mengu, that Javier hasn't had an ulterior motive, right? Because Javier just wanted them to ban cards until that are good against Fervent Champions. So of course,
exactly,
you know, make blockers against life. It has to be banned. Yeah. You know, we have to get a few cards on the way. But you know, you got to start somewhere. So you know, he was biased, I think.
Yeah. So he was so aggressive, right, about Oko. And I was, you know, okay. And then the guy was like, okay, yeah, Oko doesn't sound great. We understand. What do you think about Fires? Fires of Invention. We spent so much time testing this card. They said
why?
We balanced all the numbers and things like that.
What?
And I remember that vividly. And I was like, yeah, Fire seems like a cool card. It's pretty cool, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like, nobody played Fires at that beginning, because we were so focused into trying, you know, the other broken things, the Golos and things like that. But I remember that vividly, that he was so happy about Fires of Invention and how it turned out.
Oh,
did a nice Anthony.
But the thing is, like, yeah, I can see how the other designs are fun. I just can't see Fires. Like, you just stop playing the game. Like,
Yeah, but you can put two Cavaliers into play, give them both haste, and attack for 20.
Bam!
Yeah, that doesn't sound fun. That doesn't sound like a fun way to end the game at all. Like, am I missing something? I don't know.
And what if a few months later we print a companion mechanic that just put you are in
really
play so you
fires,
can blink
yeah.
your fires?
Yeah, that. I mean, I guess that's a lot of mistakes that lead to that. But you know,
That was the time. But now you can play this card in Pioneer. It's very fun. I enjoy going fires into Incarnation, end of turn, sacrifice fires.
Okay, that is fun, to be fair.
Whatever five drop you have in your deck and kind of the game from there.
I have an idea, though. If you are... like, remember, you can tag us on your tournament wins with fires at MTG event card on Twitter. You know, that would be good.
Probably won't be that many of them.
I mean, at least we have one. So
both finalists got their
fires.
Wins
though.
Only wins
really
count. It doesn't count if you lose the finals. You know, only wins, but wins are very welcome to be tagging Anthony for fires value.
Congrats. Congrats. And what about the challenges? Did the challenges have any fires? Ooh, I see an Enigmatic Incarnation in the seventh place by Doomwake. Yes. Nice. Lovely.
Exactly.
Doomwake.
Yeah. With four fires.
Doomwake, a great fan of enchantments.
Yeah. And I see also a very, very sweet deck winning the Sunday Challenge. That is Mr. Reeb with Indomitable Creativity in Pioneer. Cool.
Ah, so they just copied their modern deck.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, there's actually a two-card combo in this format. You play Creativity for X equal 2. You put into play Xenagos, God of Reveler, and Warspend Worm. The Xenagos gives haste and doubles the power of the Worm, so you attack for 30 with Trample. That's the two-card combo. You have a new card here called the Secrets of the Key. Do you know what that does?
No. Yeah, it makes it, you investigate and has flashback, so it's a good enable.
How much it costs?
Blue, and I think, I'm going to say the flashback's 4, might be 3, I think it's.
Okay, so you can just go turn 1 this, turn 3 that, turn 5, yeah, I mean.
If I recall correctly, but I mean, yeah, it makes a token, like that's all you care about, you know?
I've seen this deck in Sofia. I remember an Italian player, I believe his name was Alex. He was doing very, very well with it. I think he lost the winning in for the top 8 with this deck. And it's cool that you know, the deck keeps on thriving. Definitely something new. I remember playing this deck. Oh yeah, this deck got a huge upgrade with Impulse. I think Impulse. When I was trying this deck, I don't think
yeah,
I had
that
Impulse.
Makes sense.
Yeah, same. I think Impulse must have made this deck considerably better. Like, this Impulse is perfect for a combo deck like this. And particularly this deck, unlike Lotus, you could not play like the Sorcery Speed Impulse as well as the Lotus deck could. Because here you can
have
like instant speed, right? Like, you're not a Sorcery Speed deck. So the upgrade here is massive. I think it goes from unplayable to like very good. In that slot, I mean. Yeah, and I also, one thing about this top 8, not only this creativity deck, but also like Zero Ragnos in the top 8. Like,
yeah, and zero mono green.
Destroyed.
And zero mono green.
Yeah, it's like two Gruul, two Lotus, two Spirits, and then like a Phoenix egg. So it's definitely not
very cool. Pioneer is very open. Yeah, Pioneer always has these churns and the things that you think can't possibly happen just keep happening.
Yeah.
Like, imagine saying 2 months ago, black, red, and mono green just disappear. Like, what happened? You know?
It's just a tournament, but it's happening again and again. Like, you know, you're still like, yeah, mono green and Rugger are the best decks, whatever, but then boom, no one in the top 8. It doesn't happen.
Maybe we should just like blindly just make outrageous takes every weekend, you know, at some point we'll just get it right. But if we just deliberately try to be as ridiculous as possible. So
like next week when I see like Zero Lotus, Zero Spirits in the top 8, no, that's not ridiculous.
Right. My call is next week, Merfolk top 8's Pioneer Challenge. Yep.
Okay, my call is Merfolk top 8's a modern challenge. I've said this before, so...
Just copied mine.
I'm not going to call anything.
Hi, Mango.
All right. Okay. He ran out of formats to call for Merfolk, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Legacy... No,
I was just thinking about the Merfolk. I keep on playing against it in modern. I keep on beating it. And again, I keep on thinking, how does this deck win?
That's, you know...
Depends on the decks you play. If you play the combo deck, it's rough for you, right? Yeah. Anyway, go on. Yeah.
Yeah. I just play such a variety of decks, so, you know.
How you play all the decks, yeah. That's true.
Yeah, I play all the decks. So they have Electron, Anthony. I know you like Tron.
I mean, it's not the deck I hate the most that we've mentioned in the last, you know, 10 minutes, so it gets a pass right now.
Yeah, I was playing a new card, Cityscape Leveler, over Eugene. I think that's a very cool
How was it? Because Eugene was bad for me last time I played Tron. It was very bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The Cityscape Leveler?
Yeah.
I don't know. Today, twice that they countered it, and I still triggered the ability, so I was very happy.
Yeah, that seems... I mean, you can also cast it from the graveyard again, right? So you get one more trigger.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And they conceded, in fact, the turn after.
Yeah, like against, for example, yeah. Blue-Red, it has to be...
Also, it kills Murktide and, like, the other
yeah,
thing.
They, exactly, yeah, exactly, because I would lose, like, they play Murktide and counter spell my Yugi and GG. But this guy is like, well, I kill your Murktide, but you still have to counter it because otherwise...
it's an 8-8, yeah.
You know? It feels like a sort of a small Ulamog, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I was just saying, it's like Ulamog. Yeah,
but that's big deal, I think.
Yeah. I kind of like it.
Yeah, I'm going to add it. I'm going to add it to my Vintage Cube.
Yeah, you could also add the Oracle of the Alpha to your Vintage Cube, Mengu.
No, sorry. Sorry,
nah, you can add Oracle of the Alpha to other cubes.
Very fun, and very fun with the combos and the such, you know?
I play Magic the Gathering. Sorry.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, I think you will enjoy the gameplay with that card. Like, it just gives you, like, a lot of spectacular things to do. You know, you shuffle the Power 9 so you can combo with it later and the such.
Can you just imagine just having a stack of Power 9 in your tokens? What a flex that would be. Exactly. I'm already impressed when someone has, like, the foil Goblin Shaman from Kamigawa, you know? If someone just had, like, the Moxen just sitting there.
Oh, exactly, the Power 9. I mean, you can also have two Power 9s, you know, if you have the original one and then use the token. Like, in paper, you can actually shuffle those. Like, in a cube, you can actually you prepare them and you shuffle them, and it's very fun. You can also bounce a guy and cast it again so you can cure more, so it's going to be that's a little bit trickier, but you can still do it. It's easy, right? You just, you know.
Just own three Black Lotuses.
All right.
It's my job now to put us back on track.
Okay.
And talk about Anthony's favorite format, Standard.
Yay. Nice.
All right, Anthony. Did you see, because again, I don't really play Standard, but I do follow the results because I love following the results. The winner of Saturday Standard format, it's playing White Blue Soldiers. Is that a deck or did he just invent it?
Absolutely, it is a deck, yeah. This one is a little bit different because it has Slip Out the Back, which is a card we didn't really see that much of before. But Soldiers in general, I don't know if you've played much against it, but it's quite impressive how fast it can be. Like, it doesn't actually take that much for them to suddenly have like a board that's pretty hard for you to answer. And with the lack of sweepers in the format, it's actually tough to come back from some of its starts. I think it actually has the resources to, like, somewhat uniquely for an aggro deck, especially a white weenie deck, it can actually grind through removal spells like Resolute Reinforcement, Sky Strike Officer, and Recruitment Officer all help quite a lot in that regard. Even the Flashback on Valiant Veteran, so Siege Veteran as well. Like, yeah, you're more resistant to just a lot of interaction than it seems. Like, before, people might have characterized Meatook Massacre as a big part of what was making aggro decks not so good, and obviously that was some part of it, but even just your opponent going removal spell, corpse of prayers, removal spell felt like a real uphill battle sometimes. But now these white decks actually have the tools to not care that much about the removal spells. So, yeah, this it's not too surprising to see White-Blue Soldiers win.
I don't really know what these cards do very well, but I can know, I know the mana base is fantastic. Like, for Standard, you have Fortified Beachhead, which is...
That's a great card.
A Tundra, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically.
It's a Tundra that pumps your team. You have Secluded Courtyard, which is a Cavern of Souls. You don't even play four copies of a Dark Ways.
Yeah, you have great mana already. You don't need
to. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, Fortified Beachhead is awesome because, I mean, it's a similar thing to Esper where having Plaza of Heroes makes it so your mana is both more functional in terms of colored sources, but also has actual utility to it, which is lacking in a lot of Standard mana bases now. But yeah, it's like I said, Soldiers can actually go long. Like, you can just play like a bunch of random token makers in a Fortified Beachhead, and you know, your cards can actually trade up, for example. Like, your random 1/1s actually trade with cards like Bloodtithe Harvester, you know? So,
congrats to Schiavetto. Congrats to Schiavetto for coming up.
But I don't know if that's the most exciting deck for me. Like, that in this top 8. Like, the mocked blue red deck.
What's the most exciting deck for you?
The blue red Cityscape level very deck. Hard. Now, that is a deck.
Exactly. Soldiers existed. Like, I think I played like 10 times playing from the mocks. Like, you know, like, Soldiers existed, but the mock deck is like, what's this? Like,
yeah.
What? I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah. So, before there was a mono green ramp deck built around Cityscape leveler, and the logic there was just to be the biggest. Like, we've talked about how there were the Grixis decks where people, you know, Grixis swept over the format, And then people started to go a bit bigger with it than the mono white deck, with the mono white or white based midrange decks. And this is the next step. Well, what's bigger than the white midrange decks? Cityscape Leveler. Okay, that's bigger than everything. And so people played some mono green decks built around the Power Stone mechanic and Cityscape Leveler, and that was quite effective in beating those decks. Although obviously you then gain a few weaknesses to things that go under, like those ramp decks were just basically called to soldiers or and not great against Esper. But I absolutely love this blue-red ramp deck because it's almost like the creativity decks we were just talking about in the other formats where it can actually interact and also go over the top. Obviously, the mechanics are very different. You're just ramping and casting a huge spell instead of cheating stuff into play with creativity. But I think the concept is the same. And I think this is like really impressively built in terms of having a mix between interaction and ramp. So, yeah, like this is so many cards that...
The deck is wild. It is wild. It plays like Nightfall this... and Mixton. Yeah, it's a ramp card. You know, also like it has four Skitterbeam Battalion, which
I was going to say, could you even tell me what that card did before like this result?
Well, I did because I played 18 rounds of Sealed.
Oh, of course.
So yeah. I can tell you, I know most of the bombs, you know, because when you are 7-1 in these tournaments, it's like mythic bomb constructed, right? So I couldn't until Sunday, actually.
I was like really, really impressed by the Might Stone and Weak Stone in these ramp decks, especially. Like the ability to recruit the mana immediately was quite impressive, which you can do with, I mean, if you have more than 5 mana, like if you have mana left over, you might be able to do something like turn 6. You might be able to play the Might Stone and Weak Stone and play Fable of the Mirror Breaker. But even just activating Reckoner Bankbuster immediately was quite strong. And it does clear very well into cards like Cityscape Leveler, I guess. Stern Lesson, also a surprising addition that we just hadn't seen. Like random
but
draft common.
I think the Weak Stone is like Power Stone, right? Like it doesn't work for Fables. It works only for Bankbusters. Is that correct? I see this deck though, yeah. And I think so. I see this is a ramp deck, and it plays 4 Mixtons. This looks to me like this is a deck that could play Ursa as well.
Actually, if you look, there is someone who did that. Edel actually played that. He played version splashing white for Urza. So
I mean, this deck is wild, and it plays 4 battalions over like some amount of levelers. Like I assume because the lower mode, but. This, as I said, like this deck like completely folds to soldiers and play Esper. Like even Esper with something like Thalia, that has to be like completely unwinnable. Like I don't think you can ever lose to Esper. And like being with the second to draw against Esper, I will feel like
it would be rough. But like, I think Edel's version must be way stronger against those decks, right?
Yeah, Like Rafine, like this doesn't have answers to Rafine. It just
not to Rafine. I think against soldiers, this should be fine because I think Thrawn Spider. And brother with him, like both.
You're in the draw, the Rafine. You don't have to scatter or disappear on the spot. You're just dead.
But I think that's the power of Esper, right? So I think the more people play decks like this, the more it makes sense to push back towards Esper to say, hey, you still have to respect this one, you know?
I'm going to call it now. Esper comes back next week.
I think so. I think it's time. Well, to be fair, I already thought it was time. Already, but people just went even bigger instead. But all right, now I think we've reached the cap.
Look at this whole top 8. There's one Grixis, and there's like 7 decks that are not very good against Esper.
And that's a big reminder to people that you know all that hype about black decks having taken over standard, blah blah blah. The whole format is Grixis, blah blah blah. Like it didn't really.
I mean,
like when stuff like
there's
this, like
one
geez,
black.
What?
There's one mono black deck though. I don't know if that counts for a lot, but there's.
I guess so. But it's not
there's 6 non-black decks.
Yeah, like, wow. Just, it's a burnt taco guy too. That's, same guy as that we mentioned before.
Yeah, that's
nice.
True.
Yeah.
That's very good news for me because I own every card of the Grixis deck, so I'm ready.
Well, maybe you need to own some Might Stones and Weak Stones and Cityscape
Legends.
No.
Too many. It's too many cards to buy.
MTG Finance.
Lock it in.
Yeah, also, you can play Esper.
It's not.
I guess.
You already have to have Cityscape Leveler for your modern decks and your Pioneer deck. Like, what's the problem?
I only have
and your cube.
No, I only have one for the cube.
What about Saheli Flilgrim Master out of the sideboard of the Mog deck? I'm also surprised about that. This card doesn't seem like to belong here, but I assume it's good against control. The card, I think it's a very powerful card overall. When it was played on the Sacrifice deck, I thought
I was
impressed
by it.
But Saheli was a good card. Like, I'm wondering if there's like a way to make this deck work as a. More mid-range deck that can go over the top, but without going that far, and just playing Saheli's. Like, you know, maybe playing a little bit less of, like, battalions or whatever, and just playing more, like, good cards that are like breaching in the mid game, maybe.
Yeah, I think that I could see that. It might also just be like one enabler off or like one good answer to Rafine off. Like this like if I don't know. This sure. is obviously just a wild hypothetical, but I mean if a card like Rending Volley existed, you know, or came out in the new set, then this is the kind of deck that could take a huge leap from that. So yeah, I don't know. I quite like the I particularly like the look of Edel's deck, but I also like Fogs a lot. Just the whole concept of Power Stones into Cityscape Leveler. Seems like it could be really well positioned. Until we get Esper
there's
a
Torch
again.
Breath, right? Torch Breath is sort of like a volley, but it costs some mana.
Yeah, yes. that's true actually. Maybe that's what we need in the sideboard over stuff like Strangle. I'm not sure.
I mean, that's only going to be true if Esper picks up Steam again, and
it will. We'll be ready for it.
Yeah, that's our call. We agree here.
Yeah.
I will not ask Mengu, but
maybe this is the cycle. Maybe we establish the cycle. Yes.
Why does Mog play 4 Field of Ruin in his mana base? What land do you have to kill? You don't have any creature land in the former, right?
There's no creature land.
A land.
Yeah, a lot of people don't play that many bases. If you play against Esper, Esper often has no basics. So I can tell you that as the Esper player who has played against Field of... It was very upsetting. I've played against Field of Ruin plus the Restoration of Iganjo, and that sucks when you don't have one basic in your deck. So I think that's the biggest reason,
remember... the last time I played Standard, I actually played Esper at the PT, and I remember pushing for playing a lot of basics because
I was
brewing with Cleansing Wildfire that was had a great matchup against the Esper deck that didn't play any basics. So we're playing 4 basics when people played like one.
It's but even weird, the people who do play basics, think, right? Like, I mean, think about like Grixis.
No, but if you think of the other decks, Anthony, like Grixis always have like 4 or 5 basics if they have Invoke. Mono White obviously has a lot of white. I'm not sure.
But Grixis only has swamps. So if you destroy something that's not black, if you can cut them off non-black mana, right?
Okay. Yeah, I guess. But there are also this opportunity cast. I guess you have a lot of colorless mana.
Like that,
yeah,
I mean, that must be the reason you play 4 field, because like, I assume is also not that intense here. Plus, I mean, my mono white has actual targets, right? Because they have tons of basics, but then they have lands that actually do things.
Yeah. So... Also, Mengu, there's Mistress Foundry, which mono white plays, and it is a card.
Mistress Foundry and Roadside Reliquary. You know, they have utility lands, so. Yeah.
I'm not seeing that many utility lands, that's why I asked.
Not that many.
I only see Roadside Reliquary, which makes sense, but that seemed a lot, you know? For
actual
just,
mana denial, just yeah. And it kind of makes sense that if land. You, yeah, playing a lot of them, I guess, at that point. I mean, if the first one gets and the second one's really going to be hard to recover from.
How standard without creature land? That feels like, I don't know, I haven't played a standard without creature land in a long time.
I deeply miss them.
I like this standard. I think it will be better with creature lands or whatever, but I just think the gameplay of this format is just good.
Oh no, yeah, the gameplay is good. I didn't mean to imply that it was not good for lack of creature lands. I mean, I was taking the question to be about creature lands, but yes, I like this standard very much again. So.
So for me, you don't have creature lands, but you have cycling lands plus spell lands. So I don't sense that much of a difference, like as much as I expected. Because we already have like mana sinks that are lands. Like every day, I mean, they play like 6 to 7 usually. Like the very minimum 5 spell lands. And they often like spells if you want them to be. Like spell lands or cycling. So I don't think the game's flawed as much because of that.
Yeah,
if it was like only 27 normal lands, that would be different. Like then we'll be like, I mean, we have no creature lands or whatever. But I don't feel like that. I mean, some games I do. But if I draw a cycling land, it's not that much different sometimes.
Yeah, I specifically love the gameplay of creature lands just because like they make you care about the board in different ways. But it's definitely true that a big part of what we thought about initial mana was kind of predicated on what turned out to be a faulty assumption that you couldn't play a ton of these legendary spell lands. And at Worlds, we kind of found out that, well, you can. So the Esper players turned it with 3 Altawara and they were like, oh, that actually makes a lot of sense. And I think that kind of changed that bad mana paradigm quite a bit, I think, as well as the printing of... Well, actual lands that do things as well. Like, there are some creature lands, right? And other lands that do things, so...
Yeah, exactly. And we also see, like... I mean, I see some decks that play, like, only one of the legendary lands, and others still, like, the X-File from the second day, they play, like, 2 Iganjo. But, for example, this is mono-red that only plays 1 Sucking Sand. I think this deck could play 2 Sucking Sands. Maybe. There's a lot... There's always a lot of to explore in this kind of small details, which, of course, are not a big deal, but they can make your deck a little bit worse or better.
I mean, I'm a fan of 4 Altawara in Esper, so, you know, I...
4 Altawara is a lot of Altawaras. But Esper, it's a legendary deck, that's a different thing.
Yeah, that is different, but, you know, it's possible. Yeah.
All right. I think that's a standard. It keeps evolving. Then again, I think the gameplay is great. The format is great, and you know it's changing every.
We love it. Yeah. Don't tune out a standard because of what you heard from week one, guys. Just remember that.
Yeah.
It's going great.
Yeah, standard's going good now. Exactly. It felt bad, but now it doesn't. So, I think I like it. Yeah. It's also since it changed so much, you can like it 1 week and then not like it next week because it's
exactly.
A lot modern, which is the same. You know,
I assume there are other cities in the world for which this is true, but there's like a saying here in Australia that if you don't like the weather in Melbourne, it doesn't matter because you can just wait half an hour and it will be different. And standard feels like that as well, you know? Like if you don't like it, just wait a bit, it'll change again. Don't worry.
Exactly. But I like it now, so it's good.
Yeah,
I still think it will be better with Massacre, but MTG Finance or whatever, but I like it, yeah.
Yeah. Top marks.
All right, let's talk about a format that maybe you don't like it as much anymore, of your Legacy.
Yeah, I have an idea about Legacy. Like, Initiative's still legal. They're doing nothing. I mean, you either play Initiative or you try to beat Initiative and probably lose, and that's it. That's my Legacy impression for the week. What do you think about that?
Right.
Can we talk about the format? Oh, okay.
I have played actually a ton of Mono White Initiative this week. Because a friend of mine came back to Magic. He's interested in getting to Magic Online. So he got him on a trader's account. He ran Mono White Initiative and he got 3 trophies in like 2 days or something. It's been, you know, pretty crushing to see, not crushing, but like it was, I don't know, it was cool to see him like just screenshotting trophies after trophies, you know, things like that. And and then I played a team event. With another friend of mine, he was playing Mono White Initiative. Actually, I haven't talked about it. I played 2 team events. All right, I guess I'll talk about it at the end of the podcast. But yeah, so the initiative definitely looks super powerful. I have, just Mono White with Chalice of the Void. Yeah, very, very, very good deck. Although, I have to mention that on Sunday, the winner of the Legacy Challenge is actually another friend of mine, and he got the job done with Elves. Saying that he doesn't lose to Mono White, he's X-0 against Mono White. He beat one in the semifinals, as much as I can see, because 2 Mono White made the top 4, but the final was between 2 Italian players, one on Teemer Delver without Expressive Iteration, but with 4 Stifle, which, by the way, you can Stifle the Initiative.
Yeah,
I'm sure that happened in the tournament. And the winner was playing Mono Green with Elves with 4 Glimpse of Nature, 4 Natural Sentinel, and that is the Reduke version. So yeah, that just old school Elves, basically.
I mean, it makes sense, right? It's very good against Initiative, and that seems to be the trend right now. I have to say, the other challenge did have no Initiative. It had like a bunch of blue-red decks, even though these decks don't play Pyroblast anymore because it's dead against the Initiative. But and it was 2 Painter's deck. Like, I think Painter is decent against Initiative because it's a combo deck, but also they can steal the Initiative. Like, if you go turn 1 Goblin... the Goblin Welder, and then you play the Initiative, and you go Fury, attack, steal the Initiative, the game's over. And that's a similar situation like with Cephalid, where if you can, like, I think Fury plus a creature has to just destroy, or even Bolt, you know, because they play Bolt. You play Goblin Engineer, Goblin Welder, and Initiative is like, I'm pretty sure Painter crushes Initiative. And I think that's why it's doing so well lately, and it's probably one of the best decks right now for the reason.
Yeah, Julian, it's a host of the Eternal Weekend Magic podcast. I listen to them a lot. Split the final with Painter. 0 Initiative decks on Saturday and 4 Delver, whereas 4 Initiative decks on Sunday and only 1 Delver. So, you know, kind of, you can average 2 per top 8. I want to highlight the 3rd player deck, which actually I've seen in beat my friend who didn't do well in the Saturday challenge with Initiative. He was playing Sneak and Show, and look at the sideboard. He's splashing black for Virtuous Ruin and 3 copies of Gloom.
Yeah.
That's the Alpha Beta Limited card. 3, it's an enchantment, 2 and a black. White cards cost 3 more to cast.
I mean, if you will tell me, like, I don't know, I must say 1 year, no, like 2 months ago, that someone will find Gloom remotely playable in Legacy, I will be like, that's impossible. There's no card they can ever print to make Gloom good in Legacy. Like, it couldn't happen, you know? But here we are. Gloom, you know? Three copies. Yeah. Like, splashing gloom. It's not like all like Gloom is playable, but this player is splashing gloom. How like, yeah, that's completely like, I know. Yeah, I mean, that's it.
I have my beta gloom that I bought for old school. They're ready for Legacy now.
I just realized how fitting the name of that card is. That's how you feel about it now.
Yeah, I think gloom. it's not an accident, though. I think this card's it's meant to feel you, like, you know. Yeah, I cannot cast my cards. In old school, like, when they play it, it's like, oh, I cannot cast my Sir Angel until I have like
mana.
Oh, I'm sad. Yeah, I mean, that's also, another
gloom. Gloom is another important text, which is not relevant to Legacy, but it is relevant to Old School. It says that the Circle of Protection costs 3 more to activate. So instead of 1, you have to pay 4.
Oh.
Exactly.
I didn't know that.
So. Yeah, so Circle of Protection Black, you know, gets trumped by Gloom, kind of trumped by Gloom. You know, that's why they make it, I think. Exactly. They make it
and
so,
that's why Circle of Protection doesn't see any play on Legacy now.
Yeah, no, I mean, but I think because in beta, I don't think there were like any answers to circles in black, but the one kind of is. So it's kind of like they were trying to balance things since the beginning, I guess.
For sure.
Yeah, so one more week, you know, landscape of Legacy keeps being shaped by initiative decks, and you can do signal decks. Yeah. So, well, that's what it is, I guess. But Painter is probably one of the biggest winners, I think. Painter looks very good now because Fury, and I don't know, I guess Alphs also.
Yeah, then on the team event on Sunday, me and a friend of mine who was playing actually the finals list, the Delvers with Stifle, I played for at least an hour, maybe even more. I was playing Initiative and he was playing that deck, and I won a lot. Like, I had a feeling that the matchup was close. People say that Blue Red Delver is favored against Initiative, but I think that like a combination of Chalice of the Void and the Cavern of Souls, combined with the fast clock of just resolving initiative cards, I think White Initiative is favorite against Blue Red Delver. I think so. And I have posted a deck guide for CFB Pro, where, you know, with the detailed cyber guide as always. One thing that I came up, my plan, I think, in order to beat Delver, is that I side out White Plume Adventurer on the draw against Delver. And on the play, I side out one of them and I side out the Petal instead. Because it's very easy for the Delver player to just go turn one threat and then they kill your White Plume Adventurer and then they steal the initiative and you can't get it back. So I think that's a recipe for the win and why we've been winning a lot with initiative against Delver decks.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Actually, Mengu asked me like, well, what do you think of this? And I was like, yeah, I mean, I actually agree because I was doing that on the draw only. But after Mengu said so, like, I think it's actually probably good also to cut some of them on the play. Because you often lose against a Delver of Secrets because you cannot just cast your initiative card. But that's mostly true only for White Plume Adventurer, because with the other one, with 4-mana Adventurer, you can just like get there regardless. So yeah, I think that's one of the key points. And I agree with Mengu, even though that will change if Delver players play enough hate cards. But then again, then Delver players have to play against Elves or whatever, so it's a little bit tricky. But yeah, I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, you might dislike the current Legacy gameplay, for sure. But I think there is a metagame going on right now that makes sense, that makes the format a little bit interesting from a study point of view, maybe not that much from a gameplay point of view, which was one of the biggest attraction to Legacy.
Yeah, absolutely. Ooh. Yeah, it's interesting. What's happening now, it's interesting in terms of like evolution. Yeah.
Speaking of attraction, I have something to tell you about, something to talk to you about. Anthony, is this too much casual Magic, or can I talk about attraction and stickers right now?
He didn't. I mean, you already talked about Modern, so you can talk about attractions. That's fine.
Okay, so I played this team event, and I was playing Modern. And our legacy opponent started showing all the stickers and shuffling the stickers and explaining the stickers mechanic. My teammate, you know, doesn't play Magic that often, so he was like interested in knowing how the mechanic works. I would say that they spent a good 3-5 minutes talking about stickers and shuffling.
Sounds like an elaborate practical joke, but go on. Yeah.
Yeah,
sounds
exactly.
Like a troll, yeah.
And then Every game, you know, he won game one, he lost game two, and after every game, he had to shuffle all the stickers because they had to choose the stickers. Well,
right.
I think they wasted about 10 minutes overall in the match. They ended up, we ended up drawing because they drew when they were one life and we had like lethal board with even the dungeon going to trap next turn. So it was like super lethal, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, and we drew. And then, okay, whatever. You could have been, opponent could have been faster, could have played faster. We could have played faster. We could have told them to speed up the play. You know, if, again, I wasn't playing actually the match. I was playing modern.
Sure, yeah.
At the end, they tell me that the player wasn't even playing any sticker. He just did that because you
can't
have stickers in Europe.
That's unacceptable behavior. I don't know whether it's unacceptable by the rules. I would have to, I suppose, a judge would have to let us know, but I suspect it might be. That sounds very suspicious to me. I mean, certainly the amount of time that you described is too much. If it's intentional, that's very clearly not allowed to waste 10 minutes for no reason. But I mean, it's certainly slow
play. I would say that, I think it's legal because I remember reading somewhere that you can have stickers even if you don't have the cards and blah, blah, blah.
Yes, you can, but for the purpose of delaying.
But I don't think the player was doing it for a purpose of delay. I think it was just to meme, and you know, I guess he found it funny. Maybe it was his first legacy tournament with the sticker. But yeah, so we started the tournament with a draw, didn't make top four, and I don't know, of a match that we were going to win. You know, starting it's a Christmas team event, so it was supposed to be like funny and happy. Instead, I was not. So yeah, I really hate it. I think that it shouldn't be that you play stickers if you don't have any card that are sticker matters, and probably sticker cards shouldn't even be legally legacy, but that's not a topic.
Well, I mean, that's a different thing. But what I would say on that is that Magic is, by thinking that this sort of thing matters, is a sign that you have no idea what actually matters in Magic, if I'll be very honest. People think about things like, oh, I have to shuffle my sticker decks to be optimal, or oh, I have to match all of my basics, or people think that LSB picking up the pen when Dezani was going to attack anyway is some sort of Jedi mind trick, and they think that these things matter in tournaments, and you know, I can just tell you straight up, they don't. If you make a big deal out of them, you are showing everyone that you don't know, you're making a joke of yourself, and you are often causing poor experiences for other players. So I will say very bluntly that you should not do these things. And you know, even if you think it's funny, it's often not worth it. Because even if you don't care about giving other people negative experiences, I think Magic being a very community-oriented game means that these things will cost you down the line. So let me say very unequivocally for anyone who's thinking about doing stuff like that on purpose, and I'm not saying that Mengu's opponent was, they could of course not have had any kind of intent like that, but if you do have any such intent like that, don't do it. It's not worth it. So,
yeah, I agree with Anthony. So, like, I think it's acceptable, and I understand why Mengu will feel very bad about this. Like, it just feels bad. And I was also wondering, like, if you put stickers for no reason, isn't like that almost like stalling by the rules?
Well, I mean, you might. I mean, in theory, there is a legitimate strategic advantage to making your opponent think you have stickers. So I would suppose it's legal. But if you're doing it, you know, to run out the clock, if you know, then I think it starts to get dicey. But, you know, whether or not, I mean, but if it is, but like the advantage of your opponent thinking you might have stickers is, it's not a real thing, you know, like.
What's funny is that my friend won the die roll, and I told him that his opponent was playing stickers because maybe he had the goblin, the 3
yeah,
mana 2
goblin,
two, that
yeah.
That's mana equal to the vowels or whatever.
Yeah, just so call it mind goblin.
He had a hand with Chalice of the Void, and because his opponent had the stickers, I told him to put the Chalice on 0. Okay, because of the goblin. So maybe he was playing a deck with Chrome Mox and Petal. So he played like whatever on turn 1 and then played Chalice on 0. His opponent turned out to play Painter and actually lost the game because he couldn't go like Mox Opal or Petal at some point.
So it wasn't even well thought out. That's quite funny.
Yeah. Wow.
So, but I will say,
how it went.
I don't think it was technically correct for you to make a decision based on whether the stickers were there or not, I think. Like, it's I don't know if that makes a lot of sense really, but
are the stickers a magical line or only paper?
What's that?
Are the stickers a magical line or
no? They're not. But you know what's a magical line? The Transformers. You know?
Yeah, but I don't know the cards.
No, there's always been lots of Transformers. We have them on Innistrad, we have them on Strixhaven.
No. The actual Transformer card. I believe the card, actually, I'm in front of me because I opened in a collector booster. Sorry. It's called the Flame War Brush Veteran.
Are they the new
It's on Magic Online, and the player made Pop 32 in Vintage with it in the deck. I don't know what it does.
Okay. yes. You mean Transformers as in
So it's basically an alchemy card Alchemy cards.
No, I think it's just a fine magic card. Like, it does it has its decks, but it's a Transformer.
Okay. Alright, I mean that's the stickers, I think the stickers are just bad, and doing that kind of thing is just bad for time. It's not the people that, you know, like, take time to just put the tokens they don't play in front of you so you see them, you know, and waste like 10 seconds.
Yeah, it's just Bush League stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Just making a joke of yourself.
All right. I think that's enough.
Let's move on to the proper format. Sorry.
Whoa.
Sorry.
Proper naming. Let's try again.
Let's move on now to the people's format.
Yeah. Much better.
We already talked about it at the start of the start of the podcast.
No. Yeah, we're talking about a little bit of alchemy, but now it's like the true people, you know, the one that actually go to tournaments.
That's so much gatekeeping. Wow.
All right.
It's the people that go to the tournaments with their car, with their feet, shuffle their deck, and play commons. Oh, speaking of which, did you guys see my video with Toleran Community College? It just came out few days ago.
Oh, no, sweet. Yeah, I mean, I didn't watch it, but I know that it exists and it's cool. So
yeah, the editing is great. I just rewatched it today. So happy. I don't know. I just always had a smile. I mean, I guess because I was there. But also, yeah, that channel is so popular. It got like almost 100,000 views in one day.
Mango, be honest. For me. Is it something that I would want to watch other than for the purpose of being a supportive friend?
No.
Okay, but that means a lot of people would like it, because I don't really like things that a lot of people like. So, but probably
I don't know,
a lot of people
I have watched
like
other Tolarian content. It's, you know, like, it's not exactly like competitive content, but it's good content in terms of like what they're doing in the production or whatever. I have watched it.
Funny, I said no to you because I know you hate Popper, not because of the videos.
Maybe we'll enjoy it then, because I like the format of the people. I like Anthony, you know.
Yeah, the editing is amazing. Yeah, my father put it on. Put it on the house, to the TV of the house. I don't know why. And he goes,
did he understand any of it?
Because your dad is great. That's why, Mango.
Yeah.
That's very sweet, though. That's very sweet of him.
Yes. For sure. But he both doesn't understand magic and doesn't understand English. So I guess it didn't last very long.
Maybe that helps, though.
Yeah. Come on. That was great.
All right. Let's see.
Anyway,
what's up in
the people's format? So the team tournaments I talked to you was the Sunday one where we lost, we drew the first round and didn't make top four. But instead on Saturday, I had another team tournament. It's very common here for Christmas to do these team events at the local store. And of course, Christmas is this Sunday, so they couldn't make it this weekend. So they made it last weekend. I went to Rimini and we actually managed to split the final, going 5-0, 4-0 in Swiss and won the semis.
Nice.
And our pauper seat went 5-0. With Cool Dota Burn.
So that's the like the one it won the challenge? Just like with the
Yeah, it's a deck that won the challenge by FranMTG. A lot of innovation in this deck. If you haven't followed Popper week by week, the first one is Implement of Combustion over Chromatic Star. That's the one mana artifact that you pay a red, you deal a damage to the phase, but mostly you just sack it to Cool Dota and
story time though, because we played this card on PT Mardu because we thought Sahela will be large and we played this card mainly.
Oh, that's true.
And you can blame me, but I think we told the story right. I know, but that's it. That's the story. We played this card in the team on the Mardu vehicles pro tour. It was really bad.
Yeah. I went
understatement.
I went 8-2 in Constructed, 1-5 in Limited, that PT.
Nice.
Actually, might have gone 9-1. I remember I won every single die roll. 10 die roll I won.
That's so mangrove.
I remember that. Because it was like, all right, I can't win the die roll this time too. And I kept on winning the die roll every single round.
Very well played.
That's. I mean, that actually makes a lot of sense. Because if you think about it, basically all of your opponents at the end of the day say they have lost every single die roll ever in their life. So someone has to be winning all of them. And it turns out it's Andrea Mengucci. So...
10 Dairal in a row. That's so crazy.
All right, it brings balance. Story time close. You can keep talking about the deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and another new card is Dwarven Forchanter. That's a 2-mana 1/3 with Ward, pay 2 life, and a Prowess. So it's instead of the Kessig, the other card that when you play a spell, it deals 1 damage. So this is for the Mirror Match, because the Mirror Match is so popular that you have to kill this thing, so at least you take 2 damage.
Shining Blaze. Reverse Shining Blaze, yeah.
Those are the 2 changes. The rest of the deck is pretty stock. I believe it's the best deck in the format. Some people say it's Affinity, some people say it's Blue-Black, but I don't know. To me, this deck is so punishing because it either can win on turn 3, or it can grind you so easily with a Reckless Impulse and Experimental Synthesizer. So this deck has it all and very, very strong.
And also Fire Blast. Fire Blast has to be one of the best top finish cards in the format, right? There's no power level. Like, it's a cube playable card that's like in paper. So.
Yeah, so with this deck, you do like early gameplay, you just play creatures and you attack, you know? And at some point, you draw cards with the Reckless Impulse and you cast them. So I was watching my friend playing the semifinals, and he kept on like playing this Reckless Impulse, chaining them. At some point, he untaps. His hand is like 6 burn spell. He has 19 damage in his hand.
Yeah, no, this deck seems very, very, very well rounded. Like, yeah, as Mengo said, it can attack, but I could be like control combo ish. Like, yeah, this deck could. I can see this deck easily being able to play all the angles in the game, and that's a great spot to be in.
Yeah, the only problem is that you're playing 17 lands, which of course sometimes means that you have to keep 1 landers with Synthesizer or with Vodarin Epicure. You don't get there and you lose without playing. But that's kind of part of playing those decks. Sometimes it's like Blue or Murktide. Sometimes you keep 1 landers with Considers and you just don't get there. You scoop.
Is this a deck they could play 20, like 18 or 19 lands if they were like Forgotten Caves? Because it looks like it could. Like, this deck seems like robust enough in the long game that you could just cut like 1 Lavadar for 1 cave or something, maybe.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the problem with that, if you draw extra cards, you only have the blood token to sacrifice to get rid of them. Like, yeah, I mean, the flood is real, of course, and the mana curve is so cheap that, I don't know, I feel like, you know, when I watch my friend playing, the deck is just amazing, and yeah,
I see.
It's also super, it's actually very fun to play as well, I think.
I call the popper decks that are not Turo Folk.
And the Blue-Black Terror.
Blue-Black Luck deck.
Yeah, which, by the way, Blue-Black Terror now is playing 3 Unexpected Fangs in the main deck to have an edge against Mono Red.
Wow. I mean, that yeah. Must be, like, very hard to beat out of Mono Red. Like.
Yeah. Also Affinity is playing the like, a lot of those in the sideboard, but yeah. You know, not in the main deck.
Yeah, I was saying, like, you can tell how good a deck is by how the other decks are... Not how much the deck is winning, but how the other decks adapt. Like, similar to Initiative. Like, I mean, if people are playing, like, 3 Unexpected Fangs main deck, that means way more to me about how good aggro deck is. Other than that, yeah. It means way more than the deck itself winning the tournament, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's like a game. Anything can win. But that's like, a big thing, yeah.
And then I won a lot of store credit, and you know what I got with my store credit?
Foils?
I got some beautiful old bordered commons or popper.
Which one?
Like Seat of Synod, Core Wellspring, Chromatic Star, Ornithopter.
Nice. So we got a good deck picture.
Yeah. Nice. For a good deck picture next time I play 8 cast, it's gonna try to make it as old border as possible.
I like that. I like, you know, carving prizes for tournaments. It's good.
Yeah. Okay, I think we have run out our classic format talks. What are you guys going to do with this this weekend? It's Christmas. Do you celebrate Christmas, Anthony?
Christmas? What's that?
Yeah, it's the every year we celebrate the birth of baby Jesus.
Oh, I don't know if we have that down here, but sounds interesting. Yeah. Maybe I'll try.
We actually don't know if you do. Like, do you for real like have Christmas in Australia?
The best thing is that I know Javier really is asking. Yes, Christmas.
Yeah, I'm asking.
Christmas does exist in most of Australia, except for Sydney, where everybody is too sad by the fact they live in Sydney to celebrate Christmas. But outside of that, yes.
Okay. One question. This is important. Yeah? This is important. What do you dislike more, Sydney or Pfizer Invention?
Pfizer Invention.
Okay, thank you. You can continue.
It's so strange to me to think about Christmas and it's not cold.
Oh, it's burning hot. Like, it's like to the point where, you know, like when you open the car and you put your hands on the steering wheel, you're like, I should not have put my hand. I should have waited a bit. very hot here.
So do the kids think of Santa Claus or something like that? And it's hot. It's kind of strange.
Sort of. It's like a big kangaroo. So the idea is that the kangaroo jumps around from house to house and delivers presents.
I love it.
So maybe it's better. I don't know. Like, it sounds better.
I think that you watch a lot of American TVs, right?
I mean, I in don't, Australia. But other people do. I mean,
and you keep on having like these movies where, you know, it's cold, it's winter, there's like this, I don't know, right? Isn't it strange?
No, we're
celebrating Christmas. I mean,
maybe they have movies where the kangaroo is, you know, the main character.
Yeah, that's really just... it. Yeah, people watch the Australian things instead. You know.
Oh yeah, it's so cool.
I never knew that. I'm glad you asked, Kingo.
It's one of the greatest things, like, of being able to talk with people from so far away in the world, from where you live, that you get to experience all the different way of living.
Yeah, I mean, people only think about like spiders and snakes and things, but we have lots of adorable animals here as well, like the Santa kangaroo, you know.
But aren't kangaroos like aggressive, or it's like a myth?
I mean, yes. I mean, in real life, yes. But I'm sure that there are lots of animals that people think of as cute that are actually dangerous, right?
Yeah,
hippos.
Hippos are the most dangerous animals ever. If you ever see a hippo, just run away. They're the strongest killers.
Yeah.
Yeah. When Anthony, did you remember when me, you, and Kalk went to the Sydney zoo?
Yeah.
I remember the kangaroos. All the kangaroos were just chilling, sit down, like do nothing.
Yeah.
Like they weren't jumping. They weren't walking. They weren't doing anything.
But don't go up to one of them because they'll mess you up. Yeah.
Every kangaroo was just laying down and doing nothing.
Maybe it wasn't Christmas. You know, maybe they were resting for Christmas. They're just
vibing. It's all good.
No, but yeah, the different things in the world is definitely one of the perks of Magic the Gathering that brought us all the different experience and different travels.
Play the games in the world.
That's such a warm Christmas message.
All right.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so
that's it.
Merry Christmas to everyone, all the listeners.
Merry Christmas, yeah. Am I saying it right? Christmas? Is that how you say it?
I mean,
next week we're gonna say what have we eaten. That's gonna be very important. I'm sure the listeners would love to hear what, you know, Australian.
Oh no, you really not, you really don't want to hear that. You're not gonna like it. Oh,
well,
no.
Now I do want to listen to it.
Yeah, now I do. Now I do. So yeah, get ready.
No,
right,
this
now
feels so bad. Oh my god.
Take pictures of what you ate, Anthony and Javier, because we're gonna tell the listeners.
All right.
Yeah, it's kangaroo.
That's it for today, right?
What's that?
That's it
it's
for
kangaroo.
Today. Yeah.
That's it for today. I think so. Yep. I think so.
Yeah, it is. Yep.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Wrap it up, Mengu.
Yep.
Wrap it up, Mengu. Actually, Javier, are you going to be here next week? Because you said you're going to go to Almeria tomorrow,
I'm
right?
not going to be around here next week. So, you know, this is my Happy New Year announcement also.
Okay, Javier, tell us on the group chat what you ate so we can tell it.
I mean,
I'll
send it to
me. Or if it would save time, tell us what you didn't eat. You know, that would
okay.
work.
Yeah, we eat a lot here.
So. Kangaroos.
Yeah. Not kangaroos, for sure.
Oh, man.
All right, thank you everybody
all right, thanks,
for listening.
Guys.
We're going to be back next week. Mm-hmm. Appreciate the support. Bye-bye.
Bye.